When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
I am delighted to be joined by the CEO of Mansfield Town, Carolyn Radford, for this month's Ramble Meets. Sat here in the oldest football stadium in the world, no less. I didn't actually know that until we arrived here today, so what a privilege.
I know.
Thanks so much for joining us. My first question to you, I suppose, is how did you first come to start working in football?
So I've come from quite a diverse background, I guess. Didn't follow a traditional football route into it of playing football. I guess some of the executives did. I don't really know how a football executive gets involved in football. But my story is that I read politics at university up in Durham and moved down to London and worked in fashion. I love fashion, and in a legal capacity. I've got a master's in professional legal practice, and then was setting up a fashion house for my husband, and he bought this football club.
Right.
So I was working in very much a business kind of executive office background, and then this football club wasn't being run how it needed to be. It was very much on its knees. And at the age of 29, he said, do you want to go in and see what's actually happening in there? And I arrived at Mansfield.
And how much of a challenge was it for you when you first arrived here?
Yeah, it was a huge challenge, a massive shock to the system. So, I think almost, you know, being naive to the world of football, it actually stood me in better stead because I probably wouldn't, if I'd have known now what, you know, yeah. what lay ahead, yeah. I might not have actually done it. So, football, the way a football club is run, you've got so many different businesses involved. You've got, you know, retail, you've got shops, you've got restaurants, you've got kiosks, you've got obviously footballers to look after. Yeah. You know, we have obviously 20, 25 main team, individuals to look after. And then you've got your management, then we've got youth system. You know, there's a lot of people involved, a lot of, you know, people to manage and young people to manage, which, you know, is quite a feat in itself. It's not just about the product on a match day that you see. There's a lot behind the scenes that has to go on in order to make the business work as a business and be profitable, or as close to being profitable as it can be. Obviously the dream is to win your match on match day, and then you get bigger crowds, and you know, but there's such a huge operation involved in football. You know, it's not just kicking a ball around.
Yeah, of course. Do you think that coming in from outside into this new industry, this new world, means that you weren't in possession of all this sort of generally accepted wisdom about how a football club maybe should be run? Because I've heard people in the past, I've spoken to people who've been involved in the ownership of different clubs in the past,
yeah,
and they've said to me when they've gone into a football club for the first time, they couldn't believe what was going on in terms of outgoings and the way people essentially run the business side, the money side. Did you think that was, I know you probably don't want to be too rude to the ex-owners, I understand that, but there was clearly a lot of changes that needed to be made very, very early on.
Yeah, no, it was very much like cash-based business, and so it was pay on the turnstiles. You know, you come in, pay your tenner or however much it was, and go through, and then there was nobody counting how many people were going through the actual gates. Yeah. You know, the logs weren't working.
Really? Okay.
You know, nothing. It was quite serious safety issues, really.
Yeah. And revenue reporting.
Yeah, yeah. So the money wasn't coming back into the system. We also had so many volunteers that were helping out, and they weren't being paid, but I think unfortunately they were being paid.
Right.
So it was very, very hard to tally up, you know, the income revenue streams, because there was nothing, there was no accountability, and there was a lot of fraud going on.
So what did you do first of all to start to combat that? Do you sit everyone down, say this is a new now this is what we're going to be doing going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I just literally had to break it all down and not get too overwhelmed with the whole situation, and you know, it was very much this is how we've always done it.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
This is, you know, it was hard to change and have a whole shift in thought processes of how it was now going to be run as a business.
Yeah.
And we still have that now. You know, we don't allow people to just go and pay on the gate. I'm using that as an example now. You have to actually go and get a ticket and present the ticket and then go through the gate that way. And we still, you know, supporters still, you know, are upset about that they want to pay, even though you can just go to the ticket office and get tickets, not too much more hassle. Mm. But it's hard to change a whole mindset of individuals, and we had to have a big clear out. You know, unfortunately we just had to I had to be, you know, the
ruthless
young woman that was coming in, but you know, it had to be done because we coming from, you know, such a strong big business background, you have to run a business as a business, or else it's just not going to work. And then the football club would have gone, you know, slipped further and further
into debt,
and it probably wouldn't be here
today.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you think part of the battle would be to get the message across to supporters? And the reason I ask that is because in this day and age, many, many supporters of many different clubs would have, would I think, fairly seen news of a new owner coming in with a certain amount of trepidation, because I'm not saying that all owners are like this, because obviously they're not, but we've seen what's happened at places like Charlton and Leyton Orient. So I guess a part of that is essentially owning the message and letting them know that you're here for the greater good, and this is why you've got to do those things. Have you found that easy to get that message out?
I think it's just been time, really. I think, you know,
because you've been here for a while now.
Been here now
6 years.
Like 6 years, So and we've done a huge amount in that time, and we, you know, I think being young as well and being energetic, I'm very much a doer. So, you know, you can see improvements going on completely throughout the stadium. It's unrecognisable to when we came in. You know, we've got youth systems set up now of, you know, over 500 children. We didn't have a women's football team. Now we do, and we've got again about 300 coming through that, and you know, going down to age 7, I think. We didn't have a training ground. We now have a training ground about 5 minutes up the road. Again, we've got a couple of 4G pitches, and then big pavilion being built at the moment. Three full-size grass pitches. We are building a Hilton hotel at the side of the ground in this stand that we're in now. The football club is active all the time, all through the week. It's not just, you know, it's like a ghost town it used to be, other than a match day. Now we have, you know, all sorts of commercial, you know, tribute acts and things like that going on. Which brings people in, and it really makes the football club the hub of a community. And, you know, Mansfield very much needed some zest of life and some action and some enthusiasm being put back in, because, you know, it's very much a kind of a town that's been also on its knees. Like the football club when we came in, it's you know, it was very heavily hurt by the old mining industry and where that went, and so
that was going to be my next question, actually, about the role in the community. I could sort of feel when we first came in, and now speaking to you now, that you see it as more of a community focused project. And I think that's something tangible that supporters will be able to feel. If they don't really even understand or receive the message effectively, they'll still be able to feel it. And that is really important, isn't it? On the role of a CEO from day to day, you've explained quite a lot about what you've been doing since you've been here, and you guys have been very busy, obviously. What a lot of football fans would have heard a role of a CEO, or a director or an owner talked about quite a lot in football. What do you actually do day to day, out of interest?
Such a wide range.
I know it's
of
probably
things.
Quite hard to answer.
And
yeah.
Also, we run our other businesses that actually bring the income in to support a football club.
Right. Okay. Sure.
Along those sides, but you know, it's kind of. I learned the art of delegation very early on, because I can't actually do everything. So I think effectively my role is making sure that our managers that we've put in place, who are phenomenal, not just the football manager, but across the, you know, say food and beverage manager and the ticket office, and make sure that they're all working effectively.
Are these all new hires, are they?
Supporting the manager, you know, we have Steve Evans. He's, you know, quite a high maintenance kind of guy.
Right.
I think we probably rank on a similar level, me and Steve.
Okay.
You know, we support him quite heavily, you know, listening to, obviously we don't pick the team or anything like that, but we want to listen to, you know, his problems and try, and you're basically a problem solver.
Yeah.
So whenever my phone rings, it's with a problem, and I have to find a solution to solve it. In terms of safety of the football club, so I'm involved in making sure that, you know, there's no major incidents, and you have to put so many risk assessments in place and things like that. I sometimes have to look for housing for a player.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Or go into a house and see have they trashed it, or get reports from the landlord saying, "Wow, what's happened here?"
Really?
You know, it's such a variety of things. We've just had a new. I've learnt all about grass out of season, because we've had a new pitch laid.
Is it Desso?
Yes.
It's
mixture,
Desso,
and apparently it didn't go down to the right depth, so it now has to be done again next year, because they didn't go down 12
Really? So I chatted to the Arsenal groundsman a number of months ago.
Yeah.
And I spoke to him for about 40 minutes just about
pitches. It's incredible. It's
fascinating, isn't it? Yeah. So much goes into it.
That's right.
So people talk about artificial pitches. Oh, we're not sure about that. They're basically half artificial already, aren't they?
That's right, because of they're
individually knitted in, aren't they?
Knitted in, and it's, to do with the sand or, I don't know. Yeah.
with your relationship you touched on there with the players, of course you have to have a relationship with some of the players.
Yeah.
But I suppose I detected there that you were a little bit keen to point out that you don't pick the team or anything like that.
No.
And that's a bit of a no-no, isn't it? We hear horror stories of owners and CEOs going into the dressing room and all that stuff. But you have to have a relationship with the playing staff and make decisions on that basis. Yeah. Is it a bit of a balancing act?
Yeah, I mean, we try and make it very much like a family kind of atmosphere in the club. So, and we're all one team. Steve's very focused on making sure that we're all firing in the same position and that we're all very knitted together. We have a relationship. I don't go and watch training or things like that. That's not my place. I also make sure that I am that one step removed because I'm 35 years old as well. Mm. Relatively attractive female, and I don't want any kind of to be
unwanted attention.
So I'm quite astute about that. I know all about every single player. I probably know a little bit too much about football these days.
Okay.
I'm very much a troubleshooter too.
Okay.
And dealing with, negotiating the contracts with the players, that's my major role. And being aware of how contracts work in a legal capacity is quite helpful. And
of course.
And because it's our money as well, when you're negotiating a contract, I'm extra careful about,
You've got a vested interest in spending it, essentially.
I've got a vested interest, so need to make sure those agents don't get their hands on too much.
Of course. I've heard all about that in the past. So if you've got a manager, I'm not suggesting you have, because I don't know Steve Evans, but if you had a manager who was a combustible type character, he would maybe see it as a bit of an affront for you to be too close to the players or speaking to them on different occasions.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Do you think that with the way you sort of have to bring a player in, we saw Steve Evans actually on the television on deadline day fairly recently. Mm-hmm. When he identifies a player, does he then come to you and say, "This is the player I want," and then you go back to him and say, "This is why we can't get this player," or do you say, "Right, I'm off to go and do it"? Well, tell us a bit about the process.
Well, in terms of, we've had different managers, so we had two different ones. We've had Adam Murray before, who really didn't have much experience it was his first job, and he did a really fine job, but he was still learning himself. And so I think in terms of contacts and knowing which player you want to target and then actually going and getting your targets is quite a ruthless and tough process, and going, sometimes I had to be dealing with the chairman of other clubs and on behalf of Adam and bringing players in, whereas with Steve very much knows his targets and has the know-how, and he's been in it a lot. I've learned from Steve, if that makes sense, the tricks of the trade and how it all works. I mean, we brought in 15 players over the close season, which that it's just the kind of the knowledge that I've gained over that period has been incredible. Having Barry Fry sat here trying to get a little bit more
out of
us.
What was that like?
It was really good, really good. Yeah, I mean, he's such a charming guy. But also, he knows every trick in the book and knows how to, I'm on the phone to John going, he won't take such a percentage, he won't do it. And John's like, "Well, I'm not going down anymore." And I can't make him budge. He's saying, "Make him budge." So, that's literally fact of what's happened. So, I think also being a female, I can say things perhaps that men can't say. So I can, I can be a little bit more forward.
Yeah.
And edgy and still professional, but kind of, maybe, use my weapons of female. Yeah. My advantage.
Karen, I was going to ask you about that because we hear, I mean, you're one of only two female CEOs in professional football, yeah. And we know that. And the traffic and the conversation around a female CEO in football tends to only go one way. It's very hard, and I understand all that chat. But as you just touched on there, it must come as an advantage in some cases. You must be able to sort of, as you just described there, you must be able to sort of turn that to your advantage by just offering a different angle on things, a different type of approach and that sort of thing. Have you found that that's something you can use to your advantage?
Absolutely. I think, you know, that's why I look at why there aren't so many females involved in football and all the problems that we have and the major underrepresentation. I mean, you just can't take it away from the statistics are there for themselves. And, it, you know, you're not treated very well a lot of the time and you are, it's like kind of a derisory look at, oh, who's this token woman that's involved in the game? Is she actually involved in the game? Does she really?
You know, do you experience that directly?
Yeah, absolutely, all the time. So I think it is because of the way that I look, you know, and perhaps being young and, you know, younger than most executives out there involved with the game. A female can add a hugely important role, you know, in terms of, and also, you know, like I said, it's not just negotiating contracts and things, which, yes, I could flick my hair and say, please, will you take, you know, but again, it's business, isn't it? Everybody's protecting their own money. And so that works to a degree. But I think where a female voice is very important is in, you know, maybe difficult situations or, you know, hard business. And a female approach can kind of unravel the testosterone impromptu decision making that can perhaps go very wrong in a lot of cases and steady the ship a little bit, know.
So you maybe not quite as combustible perhaps?
No, I think so. And I've got a much less ego.
Okay, right. I can believe that.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
When you first came in to do the job, I suppose it would have been interesting and also a little bit daunting, I presume, not having anyone who's of your similar background or your different approach to you, because you're 29 years old, you come into this professional football club, and there's no one really other than Karen Brady, I guess, who seems to be the go-to sort of in football these days, because there is no one else. Mm-hmm. So do you think that made it harder, or do you think it made it easier for you to sort of burn your own path?
I think I've just, I am, you know, just keeping on going and creating my own journey.
Learning as you go, sort of.
Learning as I go, yeah. And what I do all the time is that I never stop learning and, you know, reading up on things. And also, if I do something wrong, I'm not a moronic thinker in that I can kind of recognise where I've gone wrong and not do it again.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm a very intelligent woman, and, you know, make sure that I, you know, use my intellect to my full ability. Yeah. And
So what do you think needs to happen then as we move forward through football, as your career moves forward, to see more representation, female representation, at board level and even at management level, I suppose. And then we have officials now who are female. What would you like to see happen? What steps, in your opinion, need to be taken for this to be better represented?
I mean, it's really difficult, isn't it? You look at kind of the composition of Parliament and how it's, you know, working on quotas, or, you know, you look at the Rooney Rule. Could that work in a female way? And also just being a little bit kinder to females working in the game. I just wondered if there was a goal then. No, there's not.
Nah. There's
many different approaches. I think just also, I hope that over time, it won't be, there's a woman in football, that it'll just be a natural thing.
Of course, the difference between, I suppose, if you take, Parliament, if you take a number of MPs, they're obviously representing male and female across the board. I mean, that's just they're there to represent the people, I suppose. Yeah. With football, we're talking, when we talk about football, we're basically talking about men's football, aren't we? Because there is women's football, of course, but that's essentially treated as a different sport for commercial reasons, for competition reasons. Women's football teams don't play against men's football teams.
Yeah.
So, as we were talking about just before we came on air, the path into having some sort of management role in football as a woman is nowhere near as obvious as it would be for a man, because they would be a player through to a manager, and after that, when they get a bit older, maybe they'd move upstairs and become some sort of director. There's no obvious way for a woman to do that,
I don't think there's an obvious way for a man to do it either.
I suppose not, no.
Because when you actually look at, if you went up to the Grimsby box there and asked the directors what their background is, or chief exec what their background is, I mean, you know, it's a real business, it tends to be. And I think there's quite a few agents, but then you think, well, you know, that then going to being a chief exec or something. But there is no obvious route. I think most people don't start off in life with, I want to be a doctor, and some people do, I guess, and then they become a doctor and that's their life. But most people, you know, it is a varied path, isn't it? Feel your way and you end up doing different things. But I think it's, you know, it's purely because I'm female that people say, you've not played football before. Do you know about football? How dare you be working in football?
I'm sure there are plenty of CEOs out there who don't know anything about football.
No, that's right. And to be honest, I do know a little bit more now than when I came into the job.
So with the directorship you hold in other businesses and in other industries, have you noticed the female representation more broadly in business to be better over the years since you've been doing it?
Yeah. I think there's definitely, I mean, I'm involved in insurance and law. I also own a beauty salon too.
Okay.
And I think it's different industries, there's very, very little, very few that are as underrepresented as football.
Changing trains slightly then, to talk about Mansfield Town. I mean, we've seen we've actually heard a bit as well about all the improvements you guys have made since you've been here. Where do you think Mansfield Town realistically fits in the scheme of football, and in the rich tapestry of football? Where do you think realistically Mansfield Town can get to with the plan you've got in place?
Well, comfortably we would, comfortably we've looked at the figures and everything. We'd love to be in the Championship. So, I think that's then you look at Bournemouth case in point.
Once you're in the Championship, you never know.
That's right. We'd definitely give it, you know, one go. But it's, I like, you know, Ben over at Burton. We speak to him quite a lot, Ben Robinson. Yeah. And he's...
They've done very well, of course.
He, yeah, and they sit there and they... And it's incredible when you talk to him that how he... And he runs it as a business and it makes it work in at such a great level. Mm. So realistically, we'd like to be in the Championship, but the Premier League would be nice too.
Yeah,
you've got a dream.
Of
What's
course
the point
have.
In
no
not
point
being
doing
competitive?
It, there'd be no point doing it, would there? And we have seen, once you get into the Championship, we've seen Brighton, Bournemouth, Huddersfield as well. Of course, Burnley have done it more recently as well.
Blackpool.
Yeah, indeed. Well, let's not talk about what happened to Blackpool.
Maybe not.
So you think with the amount of clubs that are around the area, because it's quite a packed area geographically for football clubs, you think you can, the cream will rise to the top, and with the infrastructure you've got and the appointments you've made, you can rise above.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, it's all about winning games, isn't
course,
it? I mean, if you're winning the games, then the crowds will come. Down the road at Lincoln, they had a great cup run, then got promoted at the end of last season, and they're packing out their stadium week in, week out. And when we were in the conference together, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, they were barely getting 1,000 people through, 2,000 people. So, you know, it's about winning, you know, on match day. We know that. So hopefully our manager can make us win on a match day or else there's going to be a little bit of trouble. But
That's realistic, though, you think?
The
Championship.
I mean, the Notts County, Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest, it's a fantastic football club. Mm. You know, they've been going through a bit of turmoil recently. And
well, they're traditionally a top flight club, aren't they?
Of course they are, yeah.
European Cup winners and
absolutely. Could Mansfield battle with them? I don't know. But certainly I think the town deserves to have a football club to be proud of.
You know, and we're obviously League Two club at the moment. The club I support, Portsmouth, were League Two last season.
Wow, yeah.
We won the league last year.
I love
year,
Portsmouth
which
too. Yeah.
Good, great.
Great club.
You know, Northampton Town obviously breezed through League Two, didn't they? It seems to be that if you get the mix right, get a good manager, Chris Wilder at the time, upwardly mobile manager, you can actually put a real run together. And I know Mansfield so far this season haven't maybe got the results, but they've played okay, haven't they?
Yeah,
so
we have, yeah.
So it is eminently doable to get into League One. And then once you're there, that's the first step of the journey.
Yeah. You get that trajectory going, don't you?
Absolutely. And do you think, would you like to think this is all going to be built on, I know you've put a lot of money and investment into a training centre and you want a Category 3 academy and all the rest of it. Is that the bedrock of what you're trying to achieve? So you think there's going to be players in the area, young kids coming through, and you can grab them and it's going to be based on that?
Yeah, it's a really difficult thing, isn't it? I mean, the manager that we've got at the moment, I mean, you may as well be honest about this. He wants to win games, doesn't he? So it's going to be, Adam,
he wants a job, basically.
And, you know, we had Adam and we had made him have four of our academy players each year. So they four would be
into the
first team. They'd be given professional contracts. We've tried to run that rule since then. Would they make it into the first team with the current manager? I don't think so.
Okay.
So I think he, you know, certain managers want proven, you know, and it's also the football is becoming so global, isn't it? You know, you're looking at all the international footballers that come in that makes it really hard at grassroots level to come through. But certainly that would be a fantastic model. And there are certain football clubs, I mean, you know, Stevenage and Colchester, I know they're, Colchester Robbie, he really wants to run that kind of academy thing through. And I think when we played against them, seven of his squad had come through the academy.
Really, okay.
And it makes pure financial sense as a chairman of a football club. Mm. But it depends on the manager and it depends on, you know, what results and what expectations you realistically have, where you want to go with the season.
It's a balancing act, isn't it, between it's not a very easy sell to the fan base or to you know, the people who were trying to sort of keep the club afloat to say, oh yeah, well, we may be bottom of the league and we've not won a single game, but look at all these young players we're going to have in 5 years' time. You know, it doesn't really make any sense. And so from Steve Evans's point of view, I completely... sympathise with his position because ultimately he wants yeah. to keep his job.
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, for fans as well, that's the awkward thing too. So if we hadn't this season signed, you know, 50 more players, even on transfer deadline day, we're still signing players and they're like, oh, when's the next striker coming in? When's right. the next, you yeah. know? And if I was to say, so oh, we're actually going to go and use one of the strikers from our yeah. academy, I think I would have got
yeah. yeah. Okay. Right.
But no. But it does need to happen. Yeah. Though. And so you know,
with the new EPPP system in place, where you know you guys have stated an aim to have a Category 3 status academy, which yeah. means you have to invest £500,000.
Oh, yeah, it is.
And
it's
then,
a lot.
As far as I understand it, at that point, even if you have kids coming through that academy, a Category 1 academy can come with 48 hours notice and poach your players and just give you essentially a token amount of money. So in many ways, actually, it might be a bit of a hiding to nothing anyway, because you don't know how long you're going to keep these players because they could just get picked off by a bigger club.
Yeah, that's true.
It's hard, isn't it?
I know.
It's a tough old job.
To get this, the statuses, the EPPP, it's just the amount of paperwork and it's unbelievable.
Did Mansfield vote for the plans?
Did
you vote for the plans to go through the EPPP a few years ago?
I'm not going
to
say.
Okay, that's fair enough.
But you know, we have to work within these guidelines, yeah. and you know, we have to, and you know, we want to, you know, make sure that we have a great academy. Yeah. So we'll see.
But you think the Category 3 one is realistic for the size of club? And
yeah, we're going to go for it. You have to have an indoor facility. There's all these different, with each different rating that you do, you have to basically have better facilities, and you know, just such a myriad of operations going yeah. on to make it all tick all the boxes.
Yeah, and as you go up the level, I guess it gets more demanding. Because yeah. I think Category 1 is $2.5 million a year, isn't
that's
it?
That's right.
Which is an
yeah.
incredible amount of money, really, yeah. for a smaller club, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's really interesting because I realise you don't necessarily want to talk too much about the vote you did or didn't make on the EPPP, but. For me, I was saying to on the way up here, actually, yeah. that I find it a little bit disappointing, because the romance of a club having a load of local players playing for the team and achieving things and taking that to its natural conclusion would be Celtic, who won the European Cup in, you know, 40 or 50 years ago with local players. Yeah. It seems that that's almost going to be impossible now.
Yeah.
I know. It's sad, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
Well, but there are clubs out there that are still trying to get players through their academy and get them into the first team. And we certainly want to do that. That's definitely, you know, John, my husband, who's the chairman of the club. He's from Mansfield, you know, a boy from, and I think he still has that nostalgic and, you know, not just nostalgic, he wants to see, you know, some local homegrown talent coming through and playing for the club. But there's so many factors involved now that it's becoming more and more difficult.
Yeah. Yep. Sadly, that's the way of the world. When you guys came into the club, did you have a sort of 5-10 year plan to what you wanted to achieve?
And
I know it's a labour of love because John is a fan of the club. Are you on track for that?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. So we, I think we almost broke even at the end of last season. This season I'm not going to talk about.
Okay, right.
You know, we've invested heavily. We're having a go this year.
That's interesting, Carolyn, because I read on the way up here on a news story that you guys were in line to be profitable this financial year. And that was the case.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, but we have heavily invested in the squad. I mean, you can't take that away. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, hopefully sponsorship might increase, and you know, there'll be more people coming through the grounds, the gates will increase, you know, to help balance the books maybe. But last season was easier to manage, but the playing budget this season's been more tricky.
Right, okay. we'll leave that one there. But with the team I support, Portsmouth, we used to regularly get about 11,000-12,000.
Oh, I know.
And then we went up through to the Premier League in 2003.
Yeah.
And even though we were relegated a number of times since then, you still see really big attendances.
Yeah,
I think there is something in that. If you invest in the squad and you start playing good football and you get a little bit of relative success, it can then lead on from that. And I guess that's what you're hoping for, is that right?
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, we just want to get as many people. We want to play enjoyable football. football. I mean, football's a, you know, it's an entertainment industry, isn't it? And like you said, if you're actually having a, you know, a go, and your players are having a go, then, and it's an entertaining game, I think you'll come back and not think, oh, what a waste of 20 quid on a Saturday.
Which I regularly used to think that at Fratton Park.
So, but it's down to performance, isn't it? You know, you can't take that away. So,
okay, and you talk about playing entertaining football there as well. When it comes to hiring and firing of managers, and I'll be sensitive here because I understand it's people's jobs we're talking about.
That's right. Yeah.
When you hired Steve Evans, was that a consideration? You liked the style of football that his teams have played in the past at Leeds and Rotherham and Crawley and all that?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, but I mean, the first and foremost, we wanted promotion. So Steve's had 9 promotions, so it was kind of a no-brainer that we knew who we wanted. We tried, you know, it was almost kind of a juxtaposition of going from Adam Murray, who was very, you know, for his first job, to then someone quite seasoned and at this level, has performed and, you know, got teams promoted on the bounce. And you know, we met Steve at very randomly. We just, you know, called him up, and it was after actually playing Portsmouth.
Really? Was it the 4-0?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I remember
so
that,
we'd made the long journey down to Portsmouth from Mansfield.
Yeah.
And
lovely part of the world, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, to be fair. It is, to be fair, but a long way. And then we came back, and we just, you know, and it's a really hard decision, because we liked Adam, you know, just talking about this situation. And he was doing a good job, but then you got to look at the football club, and you have to be removed from that emotional state.
Sure.
And you're also protecting, you know, I mean, football clubs are the new churches, really, aren't they? There's a lot
of
people that are heavily involved emotionally within the football club. And so we took the decision and thought, well, let's think about it. We met with Steve, met with Adam, met with Steve, and we randomly met Steve in the place where he proposed to his wife.
Right, okay.
So I like to say that I did my research on
it
and tried to romance him to convince him to, because obviously coming from Leeds, a huge club, and, you know, fantastic club, and come to Mansfield, Steve. And I think most people will have thought, you're never going to get Steve Evans, you know. But they forgot that there was a woman involved.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
And
When you interviewed him and chatted to him then, did you literally ask him the type of football he wanted to play as well?
Yeah, we did. But also, it's a manager's job to decide, you know, what formation he's going to pick and what style of football. And, you know, so personally, I didn't talk about, you know, how he's going to formate his players on a match day. But I just wanted him to win games.
Yeah.
But I like his style of play.
Okay.
I think he's, you know, I enjoy it anyway. He always, you know, he has a go right to the end of each game.
Okay.
You know, he's constantly battling, and it really is a battle.
So fingers crossed then it all goes well with Steve Evans, and you guys get you know, successive promotions, shall we say, and you're in spitting distance of the Premier League. As a CEO of a club who's, you know, with respect to the lower end of the football pyramid at the moment, do you look at the Premier League as a sort of exclusive club that you'd really love to be a part of, or do you think of it, or you try not to think of it in that way? Do you just think we're just going to be as successful as we can and see what happens?
I think that's it. You do dream to a degree, but it's not dreaming. I think you've got to be realistic in your steps as well that you take, and just take each day as it comes and just do your job to the best ability. But in our plans, you know, you just never know, do you, with a football club, you know.
Well, as you said, if you don't dream, you wouldn't be doing it.
You've got to be hugely competitive. Yeah. So,
and on that note then, with the Premier League, we talked a little bit about the elite player performance plan and everything, and one of the criticisms of that was, well, they're obvious actually, so there's probably no point going into them, but one of the defences that the Premier League issued in response was, well, actually, we make a huge amount of money for football generally, and the trickle down from the Premier League to the lower league clubs will be of great benefit to
and
them.
And it is, to be honest.
Do you see that?
Yeah, it is. You
how does that manifest itself?
You
then?
Can't take it away. I mean, we get a very, very small percentage of what they, you know, of what they negotiate with, say, you know, their media deals and everything. But
all right, okay.
I have to say that they, in the negotiations that they do, you know, they do a really good job, don't they? I mean, it's you can't
you
take it away business wise. Whoever's negotiating these huge sums of money, you know, that they're getting.
But is that not just for them though? Do you not feel that it's leaving the other 72 clubs behind?
Well, yeah, but we are still benefiting in some ways. I think
okay.
the clubs do definitely get, you know, income from.
Okay, and yeah. I suppose it raises the consciousness of football more generally. But the reason I say that is my wife's family are American, and when her father visited, he didn't really know anything about football, and he knew about the Premier League because he'd seen it on TV.
Yeah.
But when he came over, he asked me what his local club was to where we lived.
Yeah.
And we told him it was Crystal Palace, but it could have been any club.
That's
he would
right,
have wanted
yeah.
a shirt, and he would have wanted to say that he was a supporter of those. So,
yeah.
so of that team. So. With the exposure, I guess, of the Premier League, I suppose you could sort of argue that football generally does benefit from our overall experience, like an exposure
yeah.
from it. And I guess if you get a big cup draw or something, then
yeah,
you
exactly.
get a bit of money from that as well.
Yeah, we didn't last season, but
you look at
Lincoln and they were getting huge sums.
They got Arsenal, didn't they? In
yeah.
Premier. Who were you hoping for this season?
Oh, who would I like?
Dream tie. Portsmouth, not Portsmouth. You got beat last time.
No. Yeah. who would he say? Maybe
Old Trafford's got to be
Man United.
Yeah, it's not too far to go, is it?
We'll go Man United.
All right, listen, Karina, thank you very much for your time, and I wish Mansfield have all the best in the future. Thank you so much.
No, it's been brilliant.
Thank you.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this
yeah.
shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.